supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Vero operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, it's back to school time again, and the thought of it for many kids can cause excessive worrying and anxiety. Like I said in the billboard, I was one of them. But today, fear of not fitting in, making the team or the grade can really be life-altering, and for many, the implications can have long-term effects. During the next hour, we'll be talking about school anxiety and how you can help your child overcome it. I am joined here in the studio by Diane Peters-Mayer. She's been a social worker in private practice for the last 18 years. She specializes in working with children and adults who have anxiety attacks, school anxiety. She's the author of Overcoming School Anxiety, How to Help Your Child Deal with Separation, Tests, Homework, Bullies, Math Phobia, and Other Worries. Diane, welcome to the show, and where were you when I was a child?
Thanks for having me here, Dan. I appreciate it.
We're also joined on the telephone by Gene Cash. He's president of the National Association of School Psychologists and faculty at Nova Southern University in Fort Lauderdale. Gene, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Our phone number for parents is 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you are concerned about your child, if they're concerned about school, give us a call. Or if you are a child, give us a call. We'd like to hear your story. 888-477-9499. Gene, let's start with a look at the bigger picture.
Okay.
I said in my billboard in the opening that the pressure to perform is relentless, as are expectations and bullying. One might expect that nationally school anxiety is on the rise, is it?
Yes, I think it is. Anxiety in general is on the rise nationally. There was a study done recently at Case Western Reserve University comparing children and adolescents who were seeing psychiatrists in the early 1980s with those in the late 90s who were drawn from the general population. And what that study found was that the levels of anxiety were similar for the psychiatric group in the 80s and the general population now. That's chilling. And the effects of one of the unintended effects, I think, of No Child Left Behind and the emphasis on high-stakes testing has been to ratchet up the anxiety about school performance.
Well, I want to tell you, Gene and Diane, the fact of the matter is when we do these radio shows, any radio show, I give out the number in the beginning, and generally people wait to see how the show unfolds. We might get a few calls in the first segment, and towards the end of the show, the latter half of the show, if it's relevant to the larger population, the phones start to light up. Today, we've been on the air for about 3 minutes, and all our lines are filled. So,
obviously a problem.
that says something about anxiety out there, both children's anxiety and parents' anxiety.
Right.
Gene, let's start at the beginning, developmentally speaking. Before performance anxiety starts, and if there is such a thing these days, what does anxiety look like, feel like in preschool or kindergarten? Performance isn't an issue there yet, I hope.
Well, it probably isn't at that very moment, but it soon becomes that way. Performance anxiety is real, and performance anxiety can be a terrible problem for kids as they get older in school. But the main concern, and I'm glad you posed the question about development, the main concerns that lead to anxiety are developmental. They change. from age group to age group.
So the younger ones, it would be more about separation anxiety.
Usually it is. That's correct. They are concerned about leaving or being left by their parents or their primary caretakers. They're also concerned about having to deal with lots and lots of new faces, a new caretaker, new friends, new surroundings, changes in what's expected of them, and so forth.
How is a parent to know when the anxiety they're seeing, I hate to use this word, when the anxiety they're seeing is normal and when intervention's needed?
Great question. And usually it has to do with both the duration and the intensity of the anxiety. For example, it's very normal for kids to sniffle a little bit, not to want to go in their first day of school, not to feel that they don't want to go back or that they have some concerns about school on their first day or preschool on their first day. That's very normal developmentally. When that happens every day, when the child absolutely refuses, when they cry relentlessly and can't be consoled during the school day, then one begins to think that it's abnormal. And it's a good idea to consult a professional when those kinds of things happen, just to be sure.
Diane, at this level, attachment anxiety, when it gets to extremes, is often about the parent and parental anxiety. So what should a parent do to examine their own level of anxiety and use that to help their child?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when parents see or begin to realize that their child is struggling, I help parents, or I work with parents, to really take a look at what's happening in the household and how they are responding to their child. I think we send our children off to school and we have kind of an idea and an agenda they're going to go off and learn and do well. But when parents see their children struggling, then they often become anxious themselves. And I think the first thing parents have to do is take a deep breath and relax and know that there are many treatments, there are many ways to deal with the anxiety. I think, you know, I think one of the first things to do is to de-stress the household. If we're talking about separation anxiety, what is happening in the morning? Mornings are horrible in some households. And I think parents have to learn how to deal with that to help their child go out the door.
Well, I want to look at another dimension of that. I mean, you're talking about how parents react to an anxious child.
Yes.
And I want to flip it around and raise the question that it begins with an anxious parent, that a parent's anxious about letting the child go, about a child's performance or behavior in school, and so on and so forth. So my wish would be to have a parent look inside first at their own anxiety, their reaction to themselves as opposed to their children.
I think that's very important because many children who are anxious come from anxious households. In fact, all the children I've worked with, I've never met a child who did not have at least one anxious parent.
Right.
You know, it's kind of we take it in with the pablum.
Yeah.
It starts very early and it becomes a way of coping or not coping. So I think it's very important for parents to take a look at themselves, to learn how to calm themselves, and again, to de-stress the entire household.
And I'd like to add something, if I may, and that is that very often parents have strong feelings themselves about what school is like based on their own experiences, which may have very little to do with what school is going to be like for their child. And so even if they're not generally an anxious parent, they may become quite anxious about school based on past experiences they've had, biases that they have, stories that they've heard, and so forth. And those kinds of things get communicated to their children.
Well, there's an additional factor. When I was a kid, even when my kids were little, we could have a rough idea about what our children were experiencing in school. We wouldn't be accurate, but we could have a rough idea. But today's younger parents of children, technology has moved so fast and the issues are changing so quickly that parents really don't know what's happening in school, and that alone is going to raise anxiety in the whole system. Diane?
Yes, I agree, but I think that one of the things parents can do is you do want to find out what's happening in school, because I think for the young student or the kindergartner, the first time you're going into school, you want to tell your child what they can expect in school and what's going to happen at home before you go to school.
Let's go to the phones, because we've got Lynn on the line, and I think she's got an issue that's right on this point. Lynn?
Hello, yes.
Hi, Lynn. What can we do for you?
Actually, I think you might have answered my question already. I'm the mother of two small boys. One is going to first grade, the other to third, and I'm anxious. It's a private school. Performance is required, but it's also kind and loving, and everybody's treated as they should be. But I'm anxious about it. So how do I not show that to my kids?
Oh, forget about that.
I have a suggestion for you, though,
yeah.
And
anything else we can help you with?
Yeah. Well, my suggestion
that's the big one. They go back on Wednesday, so make it quick, okay?
Is that you make sure that in dealing with your anxiety, you don't withdraw from the school setting. One of the very best predictors of children's success in school is the degree of collaboration between the parent and the school. So hang in there, and even if you show your anxiety, be there at the school, communicate with the school, make sure that you're a part of your child's educational process, and things will be far more likely to work out.
Okay,
Diane,
very good.
Diane,
thanks a lot. Great show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Diane?
I think the other thing parents can do is really to learn how to calm themselves. There are so many techniques. One is just diaphragmatic breathing. Learn how to breathe. Learn how to get those stress hormones down. There's so much information out there about that. So there are just these techniques that parents can do for themselves. And, of course, at the same time, they're teaching their child how to cope and go out in the world.
Yeah, I mean, the message for Lynn, and the reason I was so quick to say forget about it, was because, I mean, children's lives depend on picking up what's going on inside their parents. You know, so, I mean, if they feel anxious, your kid's going to know. I wasn't able to keep any secrets from my children. But I think parents need to honor their anxiety. So if Lynn's anxious, if a parent's anxious, she needs to know that she's anxious and she needs care. When we feel anxiety, we need care. And that's the beginning. So it needs to be respected and not ignored or try to, you know, beat ourselves up for it.
Sure. It's okay to say to your child, I'm anxious too, but we're going to manage this together.
Diane?
Yeah, I think there's a difference in, again, the level of anxiety. Again, I agree with Jean. It's okay to say new things make us anxious. However, these are the ways we're going to cope. What I see in families, though, is if there's a lot of anxiety in the household, it's what I call a feeding frenzy. Everybody's anxious, and it's just the kid is feeding off the parent is feeding off the kid's behavior, and I think that that's really the first line of defense.
Anxiety right. is contagious.
And when that happens, parents may very well need professional help.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, and the whole system does. Let me reintroduce you. We'll take a 60-second break and come back and take some more calls.
Okay.
I want to talk about older children, too. We're talking about children and going back to school, what that environment is like for them, what their fears are, and what we can do to help them with their fears. My guests are Gene Cash. He's president of the National Association of School Psychologists. He's with Nova Southern University in Fort Lauderdale. I'm joined here in the studio by Diane Peters-Mayer. She's a social worker in private practice, specializes in working with children and school anxiety. She's written Overcoming School Anxiety, How to Help Your Child Deal with Separation, Tests, Homework, Bullies, Math Phobia, and Other Worries. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
In the last 40 years, the Democratic Party has nominated two candidates that went on to be President of the United States.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for President.
I proudly accept your nomination for
Senator Barack Obama hopes to be the third. I'm Andrea Seabrook. Join us at the 2008 Democratic National Convention from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 o'clock on 91 FM and WHYY.org.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about our children and their fears specifically around school. Actually, we're talking about their parents and their fears around school also. My guests are Diane Peters-Mayer. She's a social worker in private practice, written Overcoming School Anxiety. I'm also joined by Jean Cash, who's president of the National Association of School Psychologists. Jean, as children get older, issues, say, elementary school or later, the issues change. It then does become about performance anxiety, social anxiety, peer pressure. What can a parent do to help mediate that kind of stress?
Well, there are several things that they can do. First, it's really important that they acknowledge that that's a problem for lots of kids, so that they normalize the problem for the child. Even if the problem may require some professional help, it's a good idea to let the kids know that they're not alone and they're not the only ones who are experiencing some of those anxieties, and that it's understandable that they're doing so. It just doesn't help to say, don't feel that way. Then they can talk with their kids about some of the specifics. You know, name some specific things that make you feel anxious or upset in school, and let's do some problem solving about how you might handle those things. And it's also very important for parents to help their kids focus on positive things about school as well. Some of the things that excite them most, some of the things that make them feel best about school, some of the things that they enjoy about school, so that they don't feel that school is just one bundle of problems.
And Diane, I would also think we have to look at expectations. My Buddhist friends say expectations cause suffering, period. All expectations, even reasonable ones.
You're talking about parents' agendas when they send their child off to school?
Yep.
The agenda?
Yeah.
I think it's very important for parents to take a look at that, to take a look at what kind of pressure they're exerting on their child. And I think to really see their child for who they are. I mean, I worked with parents who really want the star athlete, or they want the straight A student, or they want the beauty, and they don't have that child. So I think it's important to look at your child's strengths and to examine that, because I think if parents don't, somehow that message is going to get across to the child, and you have to work with the child's strengths.
Let's look at the child as they get a little older. I want to talk about middle school, which is probably the most difficult period of time for children and their parents at lots of levels. For Jean, let me turn to you. Why is middle school so tough?
For several reasons. First, there's a huge change in middle school in the way that school functions. Instead of having one primary caretaker in the role or the form of a classroom teacher, then the student has to adjust to many caretakers who can be quite different in their personalities, in their expectations, in their demands, in the type of classroom that they run, and so forth. Then kids have to get used to changing classrooms so that they're not with the same peer group all the time. So the socialization becomes quite much more difficult. It's ratcheted up. The academic expectations are ratcheted up in general, and the kids are generally dealing with their hormones kicking in, feelings that they haven't had before, that with which they haven't had to cope before, not only physical changes, but psychological changes that make them more aware of the opposite sex, more aware of sexual things in general, and more aware of social interactions and some of the implications of those.
I also want to tag one other thing, and then I want to turn to Diane and talk about children's sexual development here. But I want to tag one other thing that happens in middle school, and that is children now in middle school are beginning to build their resume for college.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is breathtaking in its absurdity and danger and, you know, just overall ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that at this point now sports stop becoming fun. And become
learning stops becoming fun.
Yeah.
I have a lot of students coming in after 7th grade, 8th grade, they say, okay, now I'm told it's really important. Now I have to get the grades.
Right.
Now schools, colleges are going to look at me, or scholarships, and the pressure is on.
It's heartbreaking.
And especially if they are not doing well or falling behind. I mean, some kids have learning disabilities, and some kids just aren't. They're not doing well in the environment. They're not thriving in the school environment.
There was research published years ago that I thought was terribly important by the American Association of University Women, where they studied self-esteem in boys and girls at this age, Diane. And what they found was at this age, girls' self-esteem went down significantly and stayed down. And they attributed a lot of this to girls changing bodies and their hormonal changes, shame about it. The one girl said, my male teachers don't look me in the eyes anymore. And that's got to be an awful experience for girls. And I would think that is different today than it was a couple generations ago. The whole definition of sexuality feels different today than it was 20 years ago.
Well, actually, some of it starts by 5th grade, 5th and 6th grade. There is sexual interaction. There's no question about it. But I think what happens if we're going back to parents in the home, often fathers start acting differently around their 12 and 13-year-old daughters. And fathers sometimes distance themselves. You know, I have girls come in and say, I used to be so close to my father, I can't sit on his lap anymore. So there are those changes, right? They're trying to manage it, and then the external world is also changing in the way they respond to them.
A friend of mine, a psychologist named Brenda Barry, coined the term counter-incest. You know, where the fathers couldn't have a close relationship with their daughters once they were in puberty. And I remember when my daughters were developing. My anxiety went up, and my baseline's pretty high, so I wasn't happy about that. But
maybe you were aware of it. I think a lot of fathers aren't aware of it and just distance themselves, and nothing is ever, you know, nothing's talked about in the family.
Yeah.
Right, and teachers do that too. There's a reluctance on the part of many teachers to be at all physically close to students, even elementary school teachers, because of the concern about the way that will be perceived and how society would view it if they came into the class and saw the teacher hugging a child, for example.
Let's move up to high school, and I want you to listen to something. One of our producers, Gita Simons, recently spoke with a local high school student about the pressures she faces going back to school. Let's listen.
My name is Candace, and I am going to 11th grade this year. I'm 16.
Going back to school this year, Do you feel okay about that?
No.
So, when you think about going back to school, is there anything that makes you nervous or anxious?
Just the students there. I don't like anybody at my school. A lot of the students there have things in the past that they have to deal with every day. Some of them have drug problems or alcohol abuse problems, or some of them come there pregnant or with kids, one or more kids.
How does that feel to you?
It just makes me feel really uncomfortable going to school every day with a lot of kids that have drug problems. And me, I like him a goody-two-shoes, in other words. I do have my share of problems, but I just don't let that show. So that's basically it.
Are there any problems with bullying at your school? Or are there kids that pick on other kids?
Yeah, there's a lot of girl fights there, because most of my school is girls. There's not a lot of guys at my school, but we do have guys there, but a lot of girl fights happen.
So when you're in class, do you have any anxiety or feelings about the way that you relate with your teachers?
Me and my teachers now are getting along a lot. Most of my teachers are fresh out of college, so they're really young and easy to talk to. And if I need help with, like, boy problems, I'll go to a girl teacher and they'll help me. So that helps me pay attention more in class because I know that I can trust them.
Was it always like that, or in the past did you have problems in class?
When I was younger, I actually got really good grades, but then it's just some of the girls, they ticked me off, and they were really mean, like so mean that they would pick on me, they would push me, they would kick me, and it was crazy. I just kind of shut out everybody. I even shut out my parents, my brother, my whole family. I shut out everybody, and I just wouldn't talk to anybody.
How did that change for you?
It was a big school, so smaller schools are really good. Smaller schools are good, but the downside about it is you get to hear more of the rumors. So, because it's such a small school that a lot of rumors get spread around quicker. You hear them really fast. Like, you could hear one rumor like 2 days before it gets around. I'm going to probably try online school so I don't have to go to school every day, because I'd rather be without any social skills than to hang out with a lot of people, because I have friends around my neighborhood, like a couple of the girls down the street from me. They're really nice to me, but half of the time I'm in the house playing video games because I'm a nerd.
So partially your decision to do online school is because of these other students being negative?
Yeah. There was actually a time where I thought about dropping out, but then I thought about my sisters having their issues with being pregnant at young ages, having miscarriages, and then they dropped out of school. One of my sisters dropped out of school a week before her graduation, which was kind of stupid. So, but then I thought, what if I drop out of school? And then I thought about their lives, and I was like, oh, let's not do that.
That was Gita Simons talking with a young lady who's describing her struggles in high school. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about our children and school, what school does to them, what they bring to school, and what we can do about it. We're talking on the phone with Jean Cash, president of the National Association of School Psychologists, and Diane Peters Mayer. She's a social worker in private practice, and she's written Overcoming School Anxiety. That was a pretty breathtaking interview. I couldn't see your reaction, Jean, but Diane, you looked pretty troubled and sad when she talked about going to school online. She said she'd rather give up social skills.
Yes. It just again it points to the trend of so much pressure in school, and I mean, here's this girl who she defines herself as a nerd, and sees around her students who are doing drugs or, I guess, living in a school where there's a lot of violence. But around 12 or 13, a lot of girls who are good in math and science, they drop that, and suddenly their grades might drop. These were their interests. And come middle school, they're not interested anymore. Their life for a lot of girls.
Jean, you know, we were talking about, you know, parents' anxiety and students' anxiety and their expectations, but here we're talking about a school environment now. you know, and difficulties in the school environment. I'd just like you to react as a school psychologist. It seems to me that to take care of this young lady and the millions like her, we have to intervene at the level of the school.
That's true. Much research about student achievement, student social functioning, and student success indicates that school climate is a huge part of it. If students don't feel welcome in school, like this student unfortunately does not, then they don't achieve well. They don't interact well socially, and very often they drop out, as she was considering doing. Now, not all of that has to do with the school, of course, but a big part of it does. Schools set the tone for what's appropriate behavior, and if they don't set that set the tone that bullying is inappropriate, then it will proliferate in the school. Schools set the tone for what's appropriate sexual interaction. Schools set the tone for what's appropriate academically. And schools can either be welcoming, warm, inviting places in which students feel that they are a significant part, that they play a significant role, or they can be hostile environments, as unfortunately that young lady seemed to feel.
Right, and part of my concern is talk about school setting the tone. I know a lot of schools set a tone by setting a zero tolerance policy for drugs, for bullying, for violence, and you know, that to me speaks about desperation, fear, anxiety on the part of the school.
It's true, and unfortunately, zero tolerance policies, while I do understand them from an administrative point of view, don't solve a problem. They simply shift the problem from the school to the community.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, you know, there's bullying in suburban schools, but bullying in urban schools is quite different. Many teachers have been injured significantly, children have been killed. And, you know, teachers are afraid, administrators are afraid, and there's a great deal of pressure on them. Diane?
Well, bullying also has gone online. So, I mean, yes, the schools can have a zero-tolerance policy, but I think parents really have to monitor their children. I work with kids who are bullied on Facebook or MySpace, and it's not in the it will take place in the school, but then it's online, and when it's online, it's there forever, as some children tell me. So I think parents have to be watching what their children are doing.
Let's go to the phones. We've got a lot of people who have been waiting to join the conversation. We'll start with Doreen. Doreen, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I sort of have the exact opposite problem in the sense that my children have social anxiety disorder. I have a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, and my children are like ghosts in school. And I don't think that they've learned anything because I think that no one's paying attention. And I think one of the hardest problems I've had is constantly having to introduce them to social settings or to getting them to learn things. I mean, I'm very concerned about their maturity level, their ability to speak up, and transitioning them to an adult environment. So, just some comments.
Doreen, are your children unhappy?
I don't think so. I don't think that's it.
You sound like you're unhappy.
I am. I hate it. It's very exhausting.
Sure.
And it's difficult to have bright people inside there and they won't come out. It's hard.
What's being done? What are you doing?
It took us years to figure this out. I thought it was learning issues. I thought it was learning disabilities. Not it. They do have, they're being seen. And they're getting medication, so I'm hoping that the antidepressants, which they prescribe for kids who have anxiety, will calm them down enough to start talking.
And can I ask if anybody
sure.
anybody else has anxiety and depression in the family?
Oh, probably me. I'm a wreck
yeah,
at
I
this
hear
point.
I hear it in your voice.
I think it's really from their dad. He's older, a lot older. We're not together, but I've been remarried, and my new husband has really helped narrow this down for me. He is an educator. But it's very hard. It's very hard. I feel like they haven't learned anything in school.
I'd love to hear Diane weigh in on this. I'm sure.
I'm going to ask you, have you sought help for your anxiety? Because we were talking earlier how parents' anxiety really ratchets up the anxiety for the child. So do you mind answering that question?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I've done... It took me years for myself before I was able to even sit down and figure it out that they had that issue, because for a long time I was single. So I wasn't paying attention. Here I had these two beautiful, quiet kids who never misbehave, but they're not growing. They weren't growing. They're not maturing.
Doreen, how are you?
I'm tired because I have to get them prepared for life. And I have to push them out there.
And
push them to have friends.
Diane, to be engaged.
Diane,
what happens if you don't? Let's hear what your nightmare is.
If you don't?
Yeah, if you don't push, Doreen, if you don't do all this work, if you just relax and
let them be?
Yeah. What's your nightmare?
I'm worried that they won't be able to take care of themselves.
Develop it more. Tell me what the nightmare looks like.
They won't be able to confront people who will challenge them. That they will cower, you know?
Doreen.
Yes.
I just want to point out what's happening between you and me at this moment. You've been devoting all this energy for all this time to making sure your nightmare doesn't happen, and you're not even clear what the nightmare is. You've just been devoting all this energy to staying one step ahead of it, or to pushing these boys to be one step ahead of your nightmare, and it doesn't even have a face yet. Let's see what it is.
But what about them not being educated? What about them not having enough friends? They can't afford to go through the world in a room.
It sounds to me as if you're doing a lot of very good things for them, that you have taken steps to get them the help that they need.
My 16-year-old does, he has a job, believe it or not, I can't believe it, but he does, and
that,
he maintains it, and he'll always do that. You know what I'm saying? He's like a robot. He's going to go to work and come home, but that's it.
But when,
you know what
when
I'm
kids
I'm
get
concerned.
The help that they need, very often they're quite resilient.
Very.
I think, Doreen...
Very resilient.
Doreen, the other thing is... anxiety is a process as far as healing and overcoming it. It really is a process, and it really takes a while. And I think that's something that you might think about, and it's teeny little steps out. I mean, we all want gross behaviors when we want to help children, but it's one little step at a time, and every step your child or your children take has to be celebrated. It just builds. It's just one little step and builds, builds and builds and builds until they can start to get out.
And it's so important for you, Doreen, to be able to pat yourself on the back and say, I'm not ignoring this. I am doing something about it so that my children get the help that they need.
Well, I'd go a step further, Jean. Doreen is doing everything she can for her children that can be done right now. And it's time now for Doreen to take care of herself and her own anxiety and to find some way to find peace inside herself. I think that's the issue. Doreen, I wish you the best, and I appreciate the call. That really does highlight what's happening here, how, and I'll toss this to you, Diane, how it really spins between parents and children, this level of anxiety. And we don't know where it begins, but we need to know how it's going to end.
Yes. Again, I'm back to the agenda or the fear that my child will not get out, the fear that my child isn't learning. And I think one of the things that helps parents is the belief in their child. I believe my child will get the help. I believe my child can learn to cope, can get out there. That transmits to the child, because saying, I'm so worried and so anxious transmit to the child. So if you change that and say, I believe that we are getting the proper help and I believe my child will be able to get out, I think that helps the child.
Well, we've got to take a break. Before we do, I just want to say that I believe so deeply that our children need their parents' faith as mm-hmm. much as they need their guidance, and anxiety is the opposite of faith.
I agree.
We're talking about our children and their fears, specifically around school. My guests are Diane Peters-Mayer. She's a social worker in private practice. She's written Overcoming School Anxiety. I'm also joined on the phone by Gene Cash, president of the National Association of School Psychologists, and he's with Nova Southern University in Fort Lauderdale. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
This is David Akers for Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, a supporter of WHYY. As a Philadelphia Eagles kicker, I know last-second kicks can be hard on your heart. So I'm letting you know Jefferson Heart Care offers a range of heart care services, battling a lineup of problems that include high blood pressure, irregular heart rhythms, blocked arteries, and heart failure. For more information about Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, 1-800-JEFF-NOW.
Next time on Day to Day, West Adams is one of the most culturally diverse neighborhoods in Los Angeles. It's also a place where few kids move on to college. Can a new kind of high school change that?
I'm going to be the first kid to go to college. I have like a big old responsibility to go since I'm the oldest one.
Helping kids achieve their California dreams.
It is still possible to like make your dreams come true.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about our children and their fears, and our fears specifically around school. And that's why we have on the telephone Gene Cash, who's president of the National Association of School Psychologists. Here in the studio is Diane Peters-Mayer. She's a social worker in private practice in
Doylestown.
I get Doylestown and Downingtown confused. She's written Overcoming School Anxiety. And let's go right to the phones. We've got Bob on the line. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to explain. I am a teacher in a public high school surrounded by prep schools. The problem that I've run into is with parents who cannot accept that they actually have an average child. It's okay that there are other average children in the class just as long as their child is not average.
Yeah, that's become a four-letter word, hasn't it, average?
Yes, it has. Yeah. In fact, I think that some parents think that the word average is spelled mediocre.
Yeah, but even that's okay. I mean, I love to make people angry by using that word. When I give lectures to audiences of parents, I ask them if how many of them remember the bell curve, and most of them do. And I say, guess what, team? We're all under the big hump. You know, there might be one or two that are around the edges, but we don't like them very much anyway. You know, we're under the big hump, like it or not.
But, yeah.
You know, they laugh, but it really is an issue. No parent wants their child to be angry. How do you deal with that, Gene? I mean, I think what Bob's saying is accurate.
I think that the most effective way to deal with it is to say that people have profiles of strengths and weaknesses, and so it's a mistake for us to categorize people, to paint any person with such a broad brush as saying they're average or they're not. And instead, we should look for those things that they do well and those things that they don't do well, that either they should try to shore up as weaknesses or things that perhaps they'll decide to avoid. Like when I was in school, I got good grades, but I was klutzy and not an athlete. And I tried, but it just didn't work. And that's okay. It really is all right. It is not necessary that any person be good at everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm afraid we can generalize about klutzy people winding up being psychologists. I'm not helpful. It's kind of
probably so.
Kind of embarrassing. Bob, thanks so much for your call, and
you
really do bring up an important point. Diane, this is a system-wide issue, and I don't know who's feeding who. If schools are feeding parents or parents are feeding schools, that average is not acceptable. You know, that's the school's attitude, too. They push and push and push, and everybody winds up getting hurt.
It's probably both. I mean, I certainly have, and I'm in contact with schools, but it's really the parents that I deal with. And there's a tremendous amount of competition amongst parents, knowing that their child's friends are stars, or again, the A students, or in the Penn programs, and some of them are just almost grief-stricken that their child has not been able to, let's say, be that star or be in the Penn program. So a lot of the work is with the parents to accept their child. Who is your child?
And finding out what that means. What does that mean, that your child's not a star? What does it mean? You know, what are you grieving over?
Well, the parents are embarrassed, and sometimes it's a reflection. They feel it's a reflection of themselves. You know, maybe they haven't done something correctly, or maybe they missed the boat someplace.
Hmm. Partly that, and partly parents, some of them, want to live vicariously through their children.
Oh, excellent.
I want
point.
You, my child, to be something that I was not, something that I wanted desperately to be and could not or did not or was not.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Sharon on the line.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Sharon. Hear you very well, thanks.
Okay, I'm the mother of four teenage daughters. It was just a year ago today, in fact, that my husband told me he wanted a separation. I'm just giving you a little bit of background. I don't feel that I expect my kids to be perfect. I just really want them to be happy, and I do think that we're pretty average. But I guess my worry and my fear is that I see, especially my oldest, who's a senior this year, sabotaging herself because she just procrastinates, and it drives me crazy to see her, like, just her summer reading. I thought she had her summer reading done. She started school today, and she was frantically last night up late and didn't even finish the book for today's school, which I didn't realize she hadn't finished. So how do you help somebody? I just want them to be happy and to follow their bliss. They don't have to be perfect.
Well,
they don't have to...
Well, wait a minute. We've got two issues here, Sharon, and we've got lots of experts. So one issue is we've got a daughter who doesn't get her work done in time because she procrastinates. And the other issue is we've got a mother who gets crazy when this happens. Yes?
Well, I guess I feel crazy inside,
that's
but
what
I don't.
I mean. No, I wasn't.
I'm not crazy outside,
no,
although I know they pick up on my feelings.
I wasn't diagnosing you. I was saying, yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to get.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you're a parent. You know,
yeah. Distressed, perhaps, instead of crazy.
Thank you, Jim.
Right.
But my point was, I was trying to separate the two issues. We have two things going on, and they both need to be addressed. One is her behavior, and the other is your reaction to her behavior. And if you're assuming that if you can magically change her behavior, then you will feel better. It's not necessarily the case, is it, Diane?
No, I mean, I think you said she was a senior in high school. Well, maybe if she's going to procrastinate, then she is going to be up all night reading, and you might think about letting that go. I think she is old enough to make some decisions for herself. Maybe they're not wise ones. So what do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if she's on the line, but it seems to me, as far as Sharon's daughter is concerned, I'm reminded of a book I read by a naturalist. I can't remember who he was, but he said, in nature, there are no rights and wrongs, only decisions and consequences. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Sharon's daughter is going to get an education at lots of levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make a choice, you don't do your work, you get your feedback, and hopefully you learn from it. And if you don't, you get the same feedback again and again.
And she's going to be tired the next day. And maybe that's one of the lessons.
Yeah.
Gene?
I think it's important to recognize, too, that very often, not always, but very often, procrastination is the result of frustrated perfectionism. That is, the reason that a person procrastinates is because they want to be perfect. They can't do so. They know they can't do so. And so if they put off what they're doing until the last minute, then of course they can't be perfect because they didn't have enough time.
And that, you know, you make a real good point, because yet it is often people who are perfectionists who don't want to take the risk, and inevitably they get lots of pressure from parents and whoever else is around, and that just makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be anxiety too, because if children are anxious about something, they will put it off.
Right.
There's a dread. I don't want to study because if you have test anxiety, a lot of kids don't like to study because it reminds them of the test. So they just keep putting it off until, of course, they end up not studying.
Diane, I'm going to ask you, we've only got about 30 seconds. Tell us your vision for the future a generation from now. Think things will be worse for our kids or better?
I'm hoping that No Child Left Behind is left behind. I'm hoping that the schools can allow teachers to maybe be a little bit more creative. I also work with the teachers in my practice, and I'm certainly hoping that parents work on de-stressing, and I can't stress that enough, because it's not just schools. Children are so...
What we need is care. What parents need is care.
Need care.
And what students need. And what
and
student
guidance.
And students need,
yes,
is care. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us today. My guests have been Gene Cash, who's president of the National Association of School Psychologists, Diane Peters-Mayer, who's a social worker in private practice. She's written Overcoming School Anxiety. If you want to reach us, we're at voices@whyy.org. And if you want to reach me directly, I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Megan Scott is our executive producer. Voices in the Family is co-produced by Elisa Walters and Gita Simons. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, the host. Enjoy your week, my friends.